It's time.
We are not called to be nice.
Sandy Rios. Welcome, Sandy. Thanks for being here.
We are often called to be confrontational.
And here with me in D.C. is Fox News contributor Sandy Rios.
And you still like me or you don't like me, James?
Are you okay? You're all right.
I'm a musician. I can't help it.
Longtime Fox News contributor Sandy Rios, thanks very much for being with us.
We have, I think it's 4 to 1 youth in America wants gay marriage.
Our kids are the product of public schools. No wonder they poll the way they do.
It's time to stand up or we're going to lose everything we have.
Director of Governmental Affairs for the American Family Association.
Step up, speak up, say something, do something.
This isn't a game. This is real life.
Sandy Rios is with the American Family Association.
A pro-life radio talk show host.
Some things are worth fighting for.
Today, anti-Semitism is not just a prejudice. It's 26 people held hostage in a kosher supermarket. It's 3 children and a teacher gunned down at a Jewish school. It's a Holocaust survivor murdered in her apartment. It's 11 body bags in 12 years. Nathaniel Azoulay nearly ended up in one too. He says he and his brother were attacked in a Paris suburb by a group of local Muslim kids, one of them armed with a saw. We were in our car and it happened very quickly, he said. It happened just because I had the kippah on.
Just because you were wearing a kippah.
His speech changed when he saw the kippah, he told us. He started hurling anti-Semitic insults. Jew, you're gonna die on this road. Azoulay believes that his knowledge of Krav Maga, the martial art form favored by the Israeli military, saved his life. Instructor Avi Atlan says he has seen an uptick in the number of young Jews wanting to learn to defend themselves. It's very sad, but that's where we are, he told us. There are so many people who hate Jews. According to the French government, the number of anti-Semitic acts here increased by a staggering 69% in the first 9 months of this year. And the nature of the attacks is changing, becoming more violent.
That was CNN in December of this year. Sandy Rios with you. Certainly something is happening in France. We see it on the nightly news, whether it's cars burning or the city of Paris being ransacked. We've seen it in mass murders by Islamic extremists, whether it's Charlie Hebdo or the Jewish school. The description of all the incidents described in CNN by CNN just now. We see it with the Yellow Jackets marching in the streets, destroying property. What's happening in France? Well, our next guest knows exactly what's happening in France because he's a professor at the University of Paris. He's the author of 27 books on France and Europe. He taught economics at the University of Paris. His name is Dr. Guy Millière. He joins us now. Good morning, Dr. Millière.
Good morning.
All right, so you taught at the University of Paris. You don't teach there now?
No, I stopped teaching 1 year ago, and now I give lectures in France, Belgium, Switzerland, the United States, and Israel.
Wow. Are you Jewish?
No, but anti-Semite. I think I'm Jewish, and so I'm a victim of anti-Semitism.
People think you're Jewish, and so the description that CNN just gave, and the reports that I'm hearing about Jews fleeing France in record numbers, those are true?
Yes, and that's the truth. 10 years ago, you had 500,000 Jews living in France. Now you have only 400,000. So it means that 100,000 left the country. Most of them went to Israel. Those who could went to North America, Canada, and sometimes the United States. And I could say that if they didn't have troubles to find a job where they want to go, if they didn't have to sell the house, if they had enough money, more Jews would leave France. And some leave parts of France that are very dangerous now, to go to other parts of France. And it's very sad because sometimes they have to leave a large house and to live after that in a small apartment. And it's very unpleasant, but they have no choice. They receive death threats. They receive bullets by the mail. They have signs on the house. The police does nothing because the most part of the people who are doing that are Muslims that are radicalized. And I could say that right now the anti-Semitism you have in France is mostly Muslim anti-Semitism, and the government doesn't say it. The government prefers to say we have a problem with the rising anti-Semitism in general. But if you don't say exactly which kind of anti-Semitism creates trouble, you cannot fix the problem.
So I understand that currently Paris and other large cities have what's called the suburbs, but it's really encampments and ghettos, as it were, of Muslim refugees. And so, and you describe in your article, Guy, that the there is just a radicalization of the young Muslim men. I guess that assumes that they weren't serious Muslims before they came. I wonder if you can even know that. But what is the basis of that comment from you?
It's obvious that you have radicalization, and I could say that now in France you have more than 600 no-go zones. And they are really no-go zones, and they are in the suburbs of all the big cities. And the no-go zone is a place where the police, but not only the police, doctors, firemen are scared to go. They go there only if it's really, really an emergency, and it's a kind of commando operation when they go there. These districts are in the hands of radicalized Muslims who live of drug trafficking and of radicalized imams. And you have the same kind of problem, but I think that it's terrible, in French jails. In French jails, you have 70% population of 70% Muslims, and you have many radicalized imams, and many jails are in the hands of this kind of people. And I realized this problem when I worked for a Jewish international organization who takes care of Jewish prisoners in jails everywhere. And they gave me documents about the status of Jewish prisoners in French prisons. And it's really terrible. Jewish prisoners in French prison lives a nightmare. They are in an inferno. They cannot go out during the day except if they are with two policemen to guard them, and they cannot receive the meals they are supposed to receive. They are asked when they make encounters with other people to convert to Islam, or it's really an awful situation, and it was not like that 20 years ago. So it's really new, and you can see with many, many signs that the situation is not improving, but is deteriorating very quickly.
You know, it's funny because as I was reading your article, and of course, as I've been trying to follow what's going on in France, I see so many parallels between what's happening here and what's happening there. And I actually don't want to get into that quite yet, but I have to say that I never saw this one coming. We are having the same problem here in the United States. In fact, that was a big push under Barack Obama, was to get Muslim chaplains in America's jails. And we have a serious problem with prisoners being converted and radicalized in our jails. I had no idea that this was a pattern. It's just another thing to add to the list. So, Jews are fleeing France. I know many have ended up here in the United States and other countries, and many are going to Israel, as a matter of fact. But I'm curious to know, from your perspective, when you think this started. I was trying to, before I ask you, I was trying to reflect on this, and I thought, was this when France joined the EU? Did the EU put pressure about immigration way back during its formative years, or is there a correlation between what's happening in France and joining the European Union?
I'm not sure it's coming from the European Union. I think that the starting point was French, and the French had a very bad influence on the rest of the European Union. I think that the starting point was the decision by Charles de Gaulle, who was the president of France in the beginning of the 60s, to create what he called the Arab policy of France. And the Arab policy of France consisted in creating more and more ties with the Arab Muslim world. And he accepted the arrival of many migrants coming from Arab Muslim countries. Businessmen in France were happy because they could have people ready to work for a low price. And they didn't see that it could create troubles. So these people came a little later in the beginning of the 70s. Their families came, and suddenly the number of Muslims in France became very big. And France said it's good to create more and more ties with these countries. And if we want to become, if Europe wants to become a big power, and to have the ability to confront the Soviet Union on one side and the United States on the other side, Europe has to find partners. And the Arab Muslim world is an interesting partner. They have oil, we can sell them weapons, and they have many, many people who are ready to come to work in Europe and to work for a low price. So we have to implement this policy. And so you have the same kind of policy all over Europe, and I could say that the Arab policy of France became the Muslim policy of Europe. And I could say that now the number of Muslims is so important in Europe that Europe is a kind of hostage of the Muslim world and hostage of Islam. And it's particularly bad in France, because in France you have the largest amount of Muslims if you compare France with other European countries. And so France is really an hostage of its Muslim population. France is afraid of riots coming from these part of France, what I call no-go zones. And so the government does nothing, because you had big riots in France in 2005. It was very hard for the government to make these riots stop. The government had to say to radical imams, ask these people to stop rioting, and in exchange, we shall give you the power in these areas. So the riots stops, and the radicalized imam have the power in these areas.
Wow. So the early 2000s, that I had no idea. And I was noticing, too, that so much of the intention from the Muslim world is coming from Turkey. I have an amazing quote from the Archbishop of Strasbourg, who said, Muslim believers know very well that their fertility is such that today, what do they call it? The Great Replacement. They tell you this in a very calm, very positive way. But anyway, one day, all this will be ours. That's the attitude of Muslims toward what's happening in Europe. There's a lot more to say about this, so stay tuned. My guest is Dr. Guy Milliere from the University of Paris. And this is the tip of the iceberg. And when we finish our conversation today, we're going to be talking about things that are happening in this country that are very much like what has happened in France. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
A Le gilet jaune qui est dans la rue ce soir, c'est ce qu'on appelle...
The gilets jaunes that you see in the streets, they're mainly middle class.
Les gens du milieu, quoi. Voilà, c'est la classe moyenne.
And they're being bled dry financially.
Et bah là, la classe moyenne, ouais, on l'a saigné.
The wealth gap is getting wider. And we've reached a point where there are the very rich and the very poor. And more and more people are slipping into poverty.
Pour passer d'un côté à un autre.
Votre ticket, monsieur, si vous avez... Merci.
It's not about whether we're happy with this. It's about finding a solution. That's the most important thing.
Retired Gérard is in charge of collecting the tickets. He's stayed well away from the demos in Paris.
We count up how much they're worth and photograph it. One day, perhaps, we'll send the bill to Macron.
J'ai la facture.
Chloe and Sabrina have braved the rain and tear gas in the capital.
We don't need crumbs. We want the whole baguette. We need to eat.
Merci, monsieur.
They're not the only ones struggling.
Now we're going into a terrible time of year because we can't afford Christmas presents for our kids. I'm 51 and it's like we're going back to the time when my dad gave us an orange and some cheese for Christmas. That's what we're back to. It's terrible.
Okay, so that is the sort of a bit of a report from France 24. We played that for you a few weeks ago, just right before Christmas. It was heartbreaking. The yellow vests are making the news now in France. And there is a connection between what we're talking about in terms of the Muslim immigration and what's happening to the middle class in France. Let me give you some statistics. More than 150,000 illegal immigrants live near Paris. Since Macron became president, he has repeatedly said that those who call on him to expel illegal immigrants are xenophobic. In fact, he's been encouraging more migration, as has his government. Immigrants receive, even illegal ones, financial assistance as well as free health care, and most run no risk of being deported. Each year in France, more than 200,000 resident permits are issued to illegal immigrants. So what's happening, needless to say, is that social support is getting more and more expensive, and taxes are going up, unemployment is high, salaries are low. Public school teachers receive something like a little over $2,000 a month. Police officers a little less than $2,000 a month. And I would say that critical mass has been reached. And a lot of it is because of the weight of these social programs as a result of the expense of all the illegal migrants. Dr. Guy Millière is our guest. He has written a fascinating article called France in Freefall, which, by the way, we'll put on our Facebook page so that you can read it, because he reports so much more than we'll have a chance to talk about. Guy, I would love for you to tell us from your perspective, give us some background on this yellow vest movement. What was the breaking point for them, and how did this particular series of incidents start?
The yellow vest movement is easy to explain. If you look at the way the French society transformed itself during the last 30 years, I could say that now the French society is divided into three parts. The first part, the top part, I could say, is a kind of nomenclatura, and I use the subject term on purpose. It's made of important civil servants, members of the government, members at the high level of political parties, businessmen who have international connections and who work for the government in the frame of a kind of crony capitalism, journalists working for mainstream media, university professors, people working in the field of culture, and all these people support open borders, immigration, multiculturalism, etc., etc. Under these categories of people, you have people living in the suburbs of Paris and in the suburbs of the big cities, and these people are mostly Muslim migrants. And these migrants don't integrate, but the people belonging to the French nomenclature don't care, because they employ these people. These people are servants for them, drivers for them, and they still pay them a very low price, and they can do it because these people are subsidized by the welfare state. And under that, you have people who are more and more useless to the nomenclatura, and who are people in the middle class, people who are owners of small businesses, farmers, all these kind of people. And these people have been pushed away from the big cities and from the suburbs because they don't want to live in no-go zones. And they are the people who pay the taxes because of the big businesses and the very wealthy people have ways to put their money outside the country. So they pay the taxes, they pay the subsidies to the Muslim living in no-go zones, and they have nothing in return. They have no public services, less and less. They have no subsidies or not enough. And I could say that the nomenclatura despise these people. They can speak with French words, but you could hear, for example, people speaking like Hillary Clinton when she spoke of basket of deplorables. For these people, for the nomenclatura, the people who are pushed away are deplorables. And for a long time, these people accepted the situation. And I could say that with Macron, it became different because Macron used the language of these people very openly. And he showed that he had prejudice and that he despised, that he hates these people. And he said it openly many, many times. And so he acted according to his word. And he created more and more taxes that these people had to pay. And in particular, he is at war, like the nomenclatura, against cars. And so he raised the tax on gas. And for people like Macron or the nomenclatura, it's not important. They don't pay gas. They have drivers. Everything is paid by their business, etc. But for the people who are pushed away from the big cities, it's very important because they don't have public transportation. They need their car. And so at one moment, when the price of gas became too expensive and when these people could not have enough money to make their ends meet, they started to be really angry. And you have the starting point of the Yellow Vest movement.
So let me capsulize what you just said, just to make sure I understood. You said there's like, you gave three different categories of people in France, and you mentioned the civil servants, people that are working for the government, so they're well cared for. You mentioned businessmen, crony capitalists who are benefiting from the policies of Macron and the left, and journalists who are cooperating with their message. And then you mentioned Muslim migrants who live in the suburbs and they can be paid substandard wages because they're being subsidized by the government. And they are the servants and drivers for this other class of people. And then you have the middle class, which you said are much like and much regarded, as Hillary Clinton said, called many of us the deplorables in the United States. They're that group of people held in disdain who actually work and pay these taxes, pay not only for the migrants, but also pay the civil servants. And so... and then you said Macron is at war with gasoline, which he is, because global climate change, whatever he calls it, whatever he says it is in France, he's obsessed with that. So he wants to destroy the ability, fossil fuels, which is, that sounds familiar too, by the way. He wants to destroy and eliminate the need for fossil fuels. And so he has raised taxes on the gasoline that the deplorables who've been forced to move out of the city depend on to do their business, to take care of their farms and their families. And that was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And Guy, as you trace this in your article, you speak about Macron's response to the Yellow Vests beginning to... Really, at first, they didn't really riot. They were just protesting. And this has been going on over the course of many weeks since before Christmas. How would you describe Macron's response to these situations happening in the streets of Paris and elsewhere?
Macron has been really awful, and I think that it's coming from the fact that he's a perfect example of a member of the nomenclatura, and he had no political experience before he became president. So he had no relation with the people. He had not to participate to campaign to get elected to position of mayor or MP or senator, nothing. He became directly president. And I think that's why he speaks with so much openly despise about many people. He's ready to say, you don't have a job, it's because you're lazy, you just have to cross the streets and you will find a job. Or these people are really stupid, they are illiterate, and that's why they cannot find a job. I could say that when a politician stops to speak like that, people start to hate him. And that's what happened to Macron. And when the crisis started, he did nothing to appease, to calm down the situation. Instead, as you said a few seconds ago, he said, you speak to me about the end of the month and that you cannot have money for the end of the month. But I'm creating other big problems. My main problem is the end of the world, and that's why I fight against climate change, and that's why I raise your taxes. And you have to accept, because you don't want the end of the world. And when you speak to people who have problems to put food on the table in the evening, in this way, they hate you more and more. So I could say that he added fuel to the fire. And he did it until a recent moment. Now he speaks about the big debates, but you can see that the big debates he wants to create is a fake. It's an imposture. Mm.
You mentioned that one of his speeches, I know he hasn't made many really, during one of his statements to try to appease and settle things down, at the same time, he had emissaries in Morocco signing a UN global compact for safe, orderly, and regular migration, which defines immigration as beneficial for the host countries. And under it, signatory states, which France now is, pledge to strengthen migrant inclusive service delivery systems. And I'm guessing, Guy, that when the word got out about this, this created even more anger, like they then realize that he's an absolute liar. Oh, is that an overstatement?
No, that's exactly right. When you say in a speech, I will take care of the immigration problems, and when in the same time you send somebody to Marrakesh to sign this text, people can think that you lie. You don't say the truth. That's what happened.
I find it interesting. In fact, honestly, there's so much news right now. I confess to you, even though I do this as a living, I am having a terrible time keeping up. And I did not remember that in Strasbourg, you had a murder, an Islamist go into the Christmas market. And I did not know he shouted, Allahu Akbar. He shot at passerbys. He killed three people, wounded dozens of others severely, and later two more died. I did not hear the follow-up on that. Guy, you would think that in the midst of what was happening on the streets of France, that the government, including Macron, would have taken notice of this. But what was the response to that attack at that Christmas market?
There was almost no answer. And when it's possible, when you have this kind of attack, the government does its best to say, oh, he's not really a radicalized Muslim. He's just a guy who became insane and who suddenly did that, but we don't know exactly why. And I could add that when you have this kind of problem, you can see the huge responsibility of the French state, because this guy was not even 30 years old. He had been 27 times arrested, sometimes for bank robbery, and he was outside. He was free. He was considered as a radicalized Muslim, and he was free. Nobody was taking care of the problems he could create. And you have many, many people like that. You have, according to statistics of the French government, you have at least 5,000, between 5 and 8,000 people like him in the streets in France. So France is a very dangerous country because of the policy of the government. And I could say that American tourists who go to France, to visit France, have to be very careful because they can meet someone like that.
Dr. Guy Millière is our guest. Again, professor, University of Paris. It's a sad, sad story. And yet, it's even frightening because the similarities. Illegal immigrant or legal immigrants, migrants on the streets who have criminal records not being apprehended, killing French people and killing tourists. It's an amazing story. When we come back, we'll talk about the similarities between here and France. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.
Don't forget to connect with Sandy Rios in the morning on Facebook or email Sandy at sandy@afr.net. That's sandy@afr.net. Sandy Rios in the morning on American Family Radio.
Protesters torched cars, vandalized buildings, and clashed with police this weekend in the worst riots to hit France's capital in over a decade. Even tear gas and water cannons struggled to disperse the angry crowd. More than 400 people were arrested and 133 people, including 23 police officers, injured. Parts of Paris this morning looked like a war zone. President Emmanuel Macron toured the damage, including this graffiti on the Arc de Triomphe, calling on him to resign. The so-called yellow vest protests, named after the safety vests worn by demonstrators, began 3 weeks ago. They were fueled by an increase in gasoline tax, but have grown into a fierce fight against declining living standards.
All right, that was a report from CBS. Sandy Rios with you. We're discussing the contents of an article written by my guest called France in Freefall. It is a stunning article. And we'll put it on our Facebook page so that you can read and share it. But a few two things I want to mention. Guy Millière, who is our guest, reported that a group of retired generals published an open letter in France saying that signing the Global Compact, which we mentioned a few minutes ago in Morocco, which said that immigration is beneficial and makes the states that sign pledge to strengthen migrant-inclusive service delivery systems. That made the people of France furious and fueled more riots. And the generals noting that 80% of the French population think that immigration must be halted or regulated drastically. And the second thing I wanted to point out is that Guy reports in this that the police of France organized a protest on December 20th in front of the Élysée Palace. The vice president of the organization, made up of police officers, said that many members are exhausted, feel sympathetic to the revolt, and are ready to join it. And so such is the state of France. Guy Millière is our guest. Guy, any comments on that letter? What effect did that letter from those generals have on the French people, you think?
I think that many French people are really anxious about the future of the country. I must say that every time I go back to France, I see that people are very unhappy. And when I speak with them, they say to me, France has no future. France will become a Muslim country within 15, 20 years. And many people are afraid to go out in the evening. Even in big avenues like Champs-Élysées, because they are afraid to be mugged by Muslims coming from the suburbs. And you can see that in the way women behave. In the past, women were free to do what they wanted in France. And even women in the suburbs. Now the women are afraid to go out alone, and especially in the suburbs. And you have a woman living in the bad parts of the country who had to wear a veil, even if it's not their choice, because they don't want to be raped. So they wear a veil. They arrive in Paris. In Paris, they take off their veil. And when they go back where they live, they put back their veil on the head. And so it's not the same country as the country I used to know 15 years ago.
Yes.
And the change was very, very quick. And so I understand why people are anxious when change occurs so quickly. When you see your country changing in 15 years, one generation, you ask yourself, what will happen during the next generation? And when you see that the president accepts to ratify a treaty like the Marrakesh Treaty, you're really anxious because you say to yourself, we shall have more and more migrants and the government accept it.
I want to mention, too, because I caught this in another article, a woman named Elizabeth Sabadish-Wolf, who's been a guest on my show, and I just saw this morning. She is from Austria, and yet she was found guilty in Strasbourg, France, which is where the European Court of Human Rights is located. She was convicted of what the court called an abusive attack on the Prophet of Islam. And that's, of course, a reflection of Islam's blasphemy laws. I had no idea. I don't want to get off on a tangent about Elizabeth because I'll talk to her directly. But that's how bad things have become. And I want to go back to one other thing that I touched on a few minutes ago, Guy, and that is, let me just read this. Pope Francis in 2014, in an address in Strasbourg to the European Parliament, said, "In many quarters we encounter a general impression of weariness and aging, of a Europe which is now a grandmother, no longer fertile and vibrant. As a result, the great ideas which once inspired Europe seem to have lost their attraction, only to be replaced by the bureaucratic technicalities of its institutions." But then Luc Ravel, who was the Archbishop of Strasbourg, said this, "Muslim believers know very well that their fertility is such that today, what do they call it? The Great Replacement. They tell you in a very calm, very positive way that Europe will be ours. They want to replace aging Europe." I think that's something that we did not see coming, Guy. I have to say I didn't. I mean, I think that in America, we didn't really understand radical Islam till well after 9/11. We really were clueless. Would you say that would be the case with the French, that just the teachings of Islam would be really unknown to them?
I think that if something as big as what did happen in the United States after 9/11 would happen in France, I'm not sure that the reaction of the French people would be the same. In the United States, you have much more people who have a fighting spirit, and you had much less people like that in Europe. You could see what was the reaction of the Spanish after the attack at the train station in Madrid, Atocha station. You could see that suddenly many Spanish went in the street and said, "Peace, peace, peace." And I'm not sure yet that you would have the same kind of reaction in France. But I could say that you didn't have a movement against what's happening with the Islamization of France. You have a movement against what's happening in general. But even among Yellow Vests, you don't hear many people who agree to speak about that. And there is a reason. Many of these people had to flee no-go zones. And so they don't want to risk to receive that threat. When you write what I write now in the United States, and when you live in France, you receive death threats. You can be mugged in the streets. Some people tried to mug me after I spoke on TV talk shows in France. They said to me, "Hey, we don't like what you say." And they started to attack me. And it can happen. And you can also be sued and have the necessity to go in front of a tribunal judge and say, yes, yes, I'm guilty, and pay a heavy fine. So it's a nightmare. What's happening in France right now is a nightmare. And I could say that in the United States, you are not to this point. You are still free to speak more. I know that you have political correctness, and sometimes it's harder, but you have more free speech here, like thanks to the First Amendment. You have much less problems with Muslims. You have Muslims in parts of the country, but not everywhere in the country. And I could say that the Americans still have a fighting spirit. And I could say that the leftists in the United States try to destroy all this. And I think it's necessary to explain to the Americans what did happen to France, what did happen to Europe, and if they understand what did happen, they will understand that they cannot accept that.
As you look, I did not say or explain that you actually live now in the United States. And Guy, you told me before we went on the air, could you want to say publicly why you moved here?
I moved here because I received death threats. And my family said to me, we feel not safe anymore. So either you stop writing what you write, or we shall have to move outside the country. Hopefully I could move to the United States, and I'm grateful to the United States because I became a permanent resident, and I feel free here to write what I want to write, to say what I want to say, and I want things to stay like that. I don't want the United States to become like Europe right now, like France. And I could say that the United States is still a free country. It's still the best place on earth, and that's what I think. And I love this country. That's why I moved here. It was a rational choice. And I'm ready to fight for the United States, because I want the United States to stay what they are now. And I'm afraid of the American leftists, because I see that they want to create the same kind of problems than the problems we have in Europe.
Boy, it is. It's like an echo. It's like they all read the same playbook, and they repeat the same things. When you talked about Macron ridiculing, and I'm using him. I mean, obviously, it's the left in Europe. Macron is just the person I'm speaking of. He's the current president, talking about people who are concerned about out-of-control immigration, and whether it be numbers or the kinds of people coming in, are xenophobic, all kinds of horrible names we are called and marginalized. So that's a likeness. And you talked about the radicalization of prisoners in prison, and we've got that problem. I wonder, too, Guy, I'm guessing that as a professor, you must have received quite a bit of pressure and maybe even ostracism at the University of Paris for your views. Is that correct?
Yes. When I decided to retire, many people were extremely happy.
Yeah. And so we just have a few minutes left. What would you say, as we are grappling with our immigration difficulties, our problems at the border, our clarification of our laws, and all the other things, you're permanent resident now, and you're here legally. What kind of warnings would you have for us specifically?
I think that much more people in the United States would have to understand why Donald Trump wants to build a wall and to improve the situation in the country. You cannot have gangs roaming freely in the streets. You cannot have so many illegal aliens in the country. And you have to see what is the result of immigration of Muslims, for example. Now you have two Muslim women at the House of Representatives. And you can see that they are anti-Semite, they hate Israel, and I could say they hate the United States. They say it almost openly. And if you accept illegal illegal immigration. You will have people coming here more and more without loving the country, without respecting the laws of the United States. And you will have a population that doesn't love the United States, that chose the United States not because they love the country, but because they want to take advantage of it. And sometimes people who come here because they want to destroy the country. And so I would say that I don't understand why so many leftists are blind. Either they are really stupid or they really want to destroy the United States. If they are stupid, it's necessary to explain to them why they are wrong. If they want to destroy the country, they have to be fought and defeated.
Professor Guy Milliere, this is fascinating, and we're so happy to have you in this country with the wisdom that you bring. And I want to recommend this article, France in Freefall. We'll put it on our Facebook page. You should print it out and read it and pass it on, because it is it's a warning to all of us, even as it is a very sad read for those of us who have loved France for so many years. Thank you so much for joining me, Dr. Milliere, and thank you so much for listening. Sandy Rios in the morning on AFR Talk.